You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. Zen and the Art of Revisionist History. There's a strong association in many people's minds between the Japanese martial arts and Zen, or more accurately, Zen Buddhism. A typical trope in martial arts literature and cinema is the deadly fighter uttering cryptic philosophical phrases from Zen Buddhism, or quietly sitting in the Zazen pose in deep meditation. In reality, the connection between Zen and the Japanese martial arts is deeply misunderstood. Any strong connection which does exist is only about a century and a half old. Historically, the samurai were as much linked to Tantric Buddhism as they were to Zen Buddhism. The actual connection between Zen and the Japanese martial arts is much more modern. It began in the late 1800s and was part of a broader movement of repackaging and modernizing of Zen Buddhism and claiming association with all sorts of Japanese cultural arts. First, a little background. Buddhism began in India in the 6th century BCE. Over the centuries, it traveled to China and then later to Japan. Zen Buddhism was one sect of Japanese Buddhism, one feature of which was to seek to sidestep the intellect and be in the moment as part of the quest for enlightenment. This feature was only one of the many facets of this particular faith, but it would in the future come to dominate it. Shinto, the native religion of Japan, practiced a form of animism in which spirits called kami inhabit important people, animals, and places, such as bodies of water, mountains, and so on. When Buddhism began to gain a foothold in Japan, a process of syncretism between it and Shintoism began. Syncretism is the combining of elements of different religions or traditions and can work in a number of ways. In the case of Shinto and Buddhism, both religions remained in existence after the syncretism, but most people practiced both faiths simultaneously. They liked both of them and saw no conflict between them. Now, this might seem strange to someone who, like most Americans, was raised in a culture of monotheistic religion, but it did happen. As a result, Buddhist temples were frequently built right next to Shinto shrines, and Shinto kami, or spirits, often became regarded over time as aspects of the Buddha. This syncretism of Shinto and Buddhism later became known as Shinbutsu Shugo, or the combining of the Buddhas and the kami. In the middle 1800s, the Japanese shogun was overthrown, and a process called the Meiji Restoration was begun. This was a revolutionary scrapping of the old system of government and a total restructuring of Japanese society. It was hugely successful in transforming what had been essentially a medieval military hegemony into a modern industrial nation-state. Part of this transformation was an effort to get the people to think of themselves as citizens of Japan instead of subjects of the local samurai lord. This was a new concept for most folks. Japanese nationalism became a major theme for the new government, and they went at it with intense enthusiasm. This effort was quite successful, and demonstrating the strength and purity of your nationalistic fervor became all the rage. One of the features of this effort was the persecution of Buddhism, whose foreign origin was at odds with the new near-fanatical policy of nationalism. It also provided a handy excuse to appropriate the large treasuries of the various Buddhist temples and monasteries, while eliminating a potential political and military rival. Yes, Buddhism at this point swung a hefty political club in Japan, and quite a few temples had their own private armies as well. The Meiji Restoration put an abrupt end to all of that. The persecution, called Shinbutsu Bunri, or the separation of the Buddhas and the Kamis, resulted in temples being closed or repurposed into Shinto shrines, and priests, monks, and nuns forced to either convert to Shintoism or be defrocked. Eventually, this process eased. Today, there is still Buddhism in Japan, but it is now completely separate from Shintoism and much less influential than it once was. During the early part of this process, practitioners and apologists of Buddhism in what was probably desperation began a reformation of their faith. An important part of this new approach was to assert that Zen Buddhism, despite having been imported from China, where it was called Chan Buddhism, was as Japanese can be. Many Buddhists jumped hard on the bandwagon of Japanese nationalism. Scholars of Zen Buddhism took it up a notch from there, many claiming that Zen was not so much a religion as an experience, a quintessentially Japanese experience. This experience refers to the sidestepping of the intellect I described earlier. Further, the logical extension of this was that anyone engaged in the practice of Japanese cultural arts, like poetry, flower arranging, the tea ceremony, no drama, or the martial arts, was already practicing and experiencing Zen, whether they were aware of it or not. This newly purported connection between Zen and the Japanese martial arts became integral to the growing cult of the Code of Bushido. This cult took a code which once had been adhered to by only the tiny fraction of the population which had belonged to the samurai class, and strove to convince the entirety of the Japanese populace, mostly descended from peasants, to embrace it as their own. This, in turn, boosted the militarism that led eventually to wars, empire, and finally nuclear fire over Hiroshima and Nagasaki. This new approach to Zen also began to attract the attention of scholars in the West. One was a German philosophy professor named Eugen Herigel. He admired the philosophy of this new Zen and moved to Japan to teach at a university and study Zen further. While there, he studied Kyudo, Japanese archery. He wrote a book allegedly based on his experience entitled Zen and the Art of Archery. This book was hugely influential on the future of Zen's image in the Western world. I read it myself as a young man. It inspired the writing in the 1970s of the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance by Robert Pirsig, and also inspired the title of this particular episode of the Martial Brain podcast. There's one problem, though. Herigel's Kyudo instructor, Awa Kenzo, was on record stating his distaste for Zen. From where did Herigel draw this connection between Zen and archery? Did he make it up out of whole cloth through motivated reasoning in order to bolster sales of his book? If so, it worked fantastically. Or did the language barrier between his instructor and him lead to the mistake? In any case, Herigel finally returned to Germany, where he became a fervent member of the Nazi Party. One interesting facet of this part of the story is that Herigel's book, published in the 1920s, only reached a popular audience in Japan after a translation was published in 1955, 10 years after the end of World War II. It was very well received and added to the misconception of the history of Zen in Japan. We shouldn't be surprised that Japanese people could be blind to their history being rewritten. Like most people in the world, including Americans, most Japanese folks' grasp of history is not sufficient to see the revisionism. In the 50s, Zen was seized on in the West by the Beat Generation, and grew even more popular with many hippies and flower children in the 60s and 70s. This led to the frequent utterance of phrases like, "That is so Zen, man." This affinity for Zen by such peace-loving people is ironic when contrasted with the role Zen played in the growth of nationalism and militarism almost a century earlier. So, when you hear someone describing something as very Zen, you must ask yourself, very which Zen? Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Marshall Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.